1, 2, 3.
Do it.
Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay up.
Oh, my God. Loose.
Oh, my God.
At the 30.
No.
10.
Touchdown.
Are you kidding me?
What a tackle finish.
It's a Minneapolis miracle.
All right. Welcome on into another edition of the Scolders Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Broadmarkle. With me, as always, my compatriot, my cohort, partner in crime, Mike Anderson. How you doing today?
Doing well. Getting ready for some more snow.
More snow coming this weekend. We're recording this Thursday, so right before a lot of these moves are happening. And we have a breaking one to release here in a couple minutes here, but we'll get to that in a second. Been a while since we've been on here, so let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl before we get started. Rams versus Patriots, Mike. What do you think about this game?
What did I personally think, or what do you think the general public? I mean,
what do you personally think?
It was a little frustrating to watch.
Okay.
Just not a lot of scoring going on, obviously. Which is not something that I thought was going to happen. I know that.
Yeah, you felt like coming in this game like it was going to be a 30-45 game type thing.
You know, the Vikings obviously went into the Rams this year, and that was a shootout game. I don't remember, the final was like 38-31. That was where, like, we thought whoever got the ball last was going to score. Patriots had put up a lot of points this year, and I just felt that, yeah, it was set up to, you know, at least have both teams in the upper 20s and kind of felt like a 35-28, 35-31 game going in. So, I don't know, a little slower. I didn't mind it, I guess, but wasn't that exciting, right? For a Super Bowl, you maybe want a little bit more of the dramatic.
You know, I think coming from a Vikings fan perspective, we've had such a solid defense for such a long time that we see these games that are just like 3-3 at the halftime. And you're like, wow, okay, well, this is about the style we've seen for quite a while, is these defensive battle games where your offense is putting up points, but your defense is just holding them to nothing. So, yeah, I think the average fan is probably disappointed a good bit with it, like you said, but Patriots win another one, I guess, because that's a thing, and Tom Brady needs more jewelry. So, I guess here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I was cheering for them over, you know, McVay and
I wanted the Rams win just because it's something different, but
yeah,
you know.
I guess not necessarily McVay, but like, I don't know, the Marcus Peters and some of the other players, they just, I don't know.
I get what you're going at there, but anyway, Super Bowl recap over. Let's get into some free agency. But we had some breaking news, Mike. What was your breaking news?
We do. Case Keenum was just traded from the Broncos over to Washington. And the Broncos are going to get a sixth round pick from Washington in 2020. Washington gets the seventh in the same year. And Keenum agreed to a contract restructure. So he is going to get a $500K restructure bonus. And then each of the two teams are going to pay him $3.5 million this year.
Sure.
So he's taking a little over $10 million bath, if you will, from what he made last year, but it sounds like he's also guaranteeing himself $500K more than what the contract was presented for this year. So I think it sounds like maybe it was worked out to where everyone's in a good spot. Obviously, Alex Smith, with a horrific injury last year, I don't think is planning to play at all this year. So Washington definitely needed a quarterback. They get their guy. Keenum obviously looking to improve based on last year, and it sounds like a good situation for everyone. I'm not sure what that means for Denver at this point, obviously.
Well, you know, with them trading for Joe Flacco, you know.
Yeah.
Did we ever get conversation on that? Was there ever released conversation on that? Because I know there was a deal in place to trade for him. I don't remember any picks coming to light with that.
I don't know. I can see what I can find here. Is that the plan? You're going to roll with Flacco? It must be the plan, I suppose.
I guess maybe they think that he can do similar things that Peyton Manning did kind of in his twilight years. You know, and I get it from the perspective of Keenum. Like, I understand how magical 2017 was, but 2017 for Case Keenum was an outlier good year. He's had a lot of seasons where he's been mediocre, and this is about what I was expecting when he went to Denver. Is he wasn't going to be able to recapture that, because a lot of things had to go right for that. A lot of situations had to be perfect for him to be in that situation. And now you kind of see what Keenum is, and now you see them basically trading him away for almost nothing. And actually even less than that, because they're getting rid of half the salary that they don't need to pay.
Yeah, sounds like Denver's happy because they're freeing up the space. And Washington is probably happy because they have someone that most NFL fans have heard of, at least. That will
well, not only that, but he started 2 years in a row. Right. So yeah. You get that also. You get some veteran kind of in place there. But I think it's a no-brainer from Washington. Like this, you had to do something behind Alex Smith. He's not going to be ready because that injury was, what, like week 12 or something like that? Something significantly late, and that kind of an injury is not going to be healed in a year, if at all, if he even decides to come back at all. Right? So, anyway, moving on, Mike. Moving on. We have bigger fish to fry here.
Right.
We have free agency opening up in about 5 days by the time this podcast is launched. So hopefully by the time you've heard this, it'll be a couple days until free agency, and we're here to give you some primers on it, give you some definitions of some terms you're going to be hearing out there. So hopefully this is helpful for everyone.
Yeah.
So it's going to start it out here with kind of a primer of some of these different definitions that you hear thrown around, and just kind of educate some people if you don't know. So first off, one of the things that is tied to almost every one of these is the years of service or accrued seasons, Mike. So if you don't know what these are, pretty simple. If you're on the roster, on the 53-man roster, I think it's for more than 8 games, you get an accrued year of service. Okay. Regardless if you start, regardless if you're inactive every single game, that's full pay status, as they say, so you get an accrued year of service. All right? If you're on the IR for 6 or more games, that's also an accrued year of service.
Okay.
Physically unable to perform from non-football injuries, like, for instance, when a quarterback kicked his leg through a door and cut his leg on a door, that doesn't count. You don't get credit for that.
Okay.
Because you screwed yourself on that one, right? Practice squad does not qualify. So if you're on a practice squad the entire year, that does not count as an accrued season. And the commissioner's exempt list also does not qualify. Now, why these matter, Mike? You've heard the term exclusive rights free agent. Unless it's a player with 2 or less accrued years. Now, these guys have like almost no negotiating rights. Basically sign them for vet minimum, which is $495,000. So we already did this twice with Matt Wiley, the punter, and CJ Ham. So these are typically guys, they get brought in, they get signed like a 3-year contract, they get cut with the team, and they get brought into another team, and this is typically how you end up with these guys. Fairly rare, but there's a couple of them on each team, give or take.
Okay.
Restricted free agents, you've heard this one a lot. Last year we had a couple tenders out there. I'm expecting the same this year. So this is a guy with 3 or less accrued seasons. And this is a restricted free agent, which means that the team, if they tender this player, they get first rights to match a contract that's offered to that player. So say, for instance, we RFA tender. Let's see, who we got? One of those. Rashad Hill, I think, is an RFA. So say we were to restricted free agent tender Rashad Hill in a second round tender, okay? If a team offers him $4 million a year for 3 years, we can either match that offer, or we can say, no, you can keep him, and then they have to give us their second round pick. Because there's 3 tiers to this, first round, second round, and original round tenders. First round, you obviously get a first round pick in compensation. Second round, you get a second round pick in compensation. Original round, you get the original pick that they were at. So third, fourth, fifth, sixth round, if they're undrafted, you wouldn't get anything in return for that. But you'd get the first right to match that contract.
And the round that you get back is determined by the
round that they were drafted in.
Okay, so not the dollar amount of that contract.
Correct. So these dollar amounts that are in this contract that are in our show notes here, for instance, first round tender, that is a guaranteed contract worth $4.4 million. So if we were to first round tender Rashad Hill, he would be getting a contract that's $4.4 million. That's what he's being paid that year. And if anyone wants to take him away from us, they offer him a contract that we are not going to match, and they need to send their first-round pick to us.
Okay.
Same for the second round, same for the original round tender. So typically you see a lot of second-round tenders go around. That's what Nick Easton was on last year. That's what Brett Jones was on that we traded for on the Giants. They were both on second-round tenders. Last year it was $2.9 million, now it's $3.1
million. Okay.
So those are the tenders. Unrestricted free agents are those with 4 or more years of service. So that's basically the three levels of guys you're looking at.
Now, are those compensation picks, say that we do get a pick, say we don't match in the Hill example you gave, and we get that pick back, that is going to be, are those at the back end of those given rounds? Is that how that works?
Because
it's not the team's actual pick, is
it? I think it is the team's actual pick.
Oh, it is?
It is the team's actual. So, for instance, if Cardinals matched Rashad Hill's offer, we would get the first pick in the second round, in the example we gave.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. I never knew that. I thought for some others, like, you know, the compensatory picks that happen almost like...
No, it is them surrendering a pick. That's why it's some of these are basically, you throw these on guy, like, for instance, we'll get into it later, but Anthony Harris is a restricted free agent. So it's unlikely that a team would be willing to give up a second-round pick and sign him to a decent contract that we wouldn't match if we throw a second-round tender at him. So that's kind of the reason why this exists, is it's like, okay, we're going to pay you well enough with one of these tenders, but we're going to make it so that if someone really wants you, they better really want you, because they're going to be sacrificing one of their picks to do it.
Okay. Makes sense.
That's why those exist. Another term you're going to hear thrown around, which I think there's only 3 franchise tags thrown out, is franchise tag and transition tag. Now, these have already been doled out for the year. These can't be applied anymore. But these are basically prices that are set based on last year's average salaries for these positions. So the franchise tag is the greater of the average of the top 5 in that position, or 30% over your previous years. So you said, I think it was DeMarcus Lawrence for the Cowboys. He was franchise tagged, and he's going to make like $20 million or something like that, something ridiculous. That's because he was also franchise tagged last year. So his is more than the 17.1 that the franchise tag is, because he's getting an extra 20% on that. Now, the transition tag is the average of the, I think it's the 5th through the 20th in that position group. 5th through the 20th or 5th through the 25th. Fuzzy on the details there, but it's a much lower number. So, for instance, a defensive end, the franchise tag is $17.1 million. The transition tag is $14.3 million. So the transition tag is also not exclusive. So I think someone else can exceed that offer. And you can either sign them to that or not.
Okay.
That's kind of what those two things are meant for, is to kind of bridge the gap. The reason why you don't see him use that often, you look at Le'Veon Bell last year. He was franchise tagged again last year, and he chose not to sign it. That's not uncommon nowadays, because that's basically saying, we want you at a one-year rental. We don't expect you to be good. Because if you really want that player, you're going to be able to sign them long-term before you have to use a franchise tag. So, in my world, franchise tagging a player is typically considered lazy, because you weren't good enough to sign them in the first place.
Sure.
But that exists. Like I said, it's fairly rarely used nowadays.
Okay. Now, like CJ Ham, I think I noticed we signed him for like $640K. And I noticed here the league minimum at $495K. Is that just us kind of saying, hey, we like what you've done here, giving them a little bit more than what
Correct.
We needed to?
Okay. Correct, yeah. So, like, the minimum you need to sign them for is that league minimum.
Okay.
But you can give them more. It's just they have no leverage in that situation. So they either agree to that and they play for you, or they don't and used to hold their rights, so they can't play for anyone else.
Okay.
So it's basically they're still under contract, but they're not really.
Sure. Okay.
It's kind of how that goes. It's one of the more indentured servitude statuses you can have.
Yeah.
There's also something you'll hear called the top 51 rule. So in the off season, The way they calculate the cap, because rosters balloon to 90 players, is only the top 51 count against your cap. All right. The reason why this is important is because this allows teams to make moves that they can't normally do under the in-season rules. Like in during the in-season rules, your top, all your 53 players on the roster, plus your practice squad, plus anyone you've put on IR counts against your cap space. But in the off-season, it's only the top 51 players' salaries. So it allows you to make these moves where you're not having to chunk out like $3-4 million for all this extra crap. That's why you also see rookie contracts not get signed till late in the season or the off-season, because you're still making free agency moves. You're still kind of shuffling pieces around and seeing what you kind of need to create to be able to make sure you have enough room for that.
Yeah.
All right. One other thing that really is kind of irrelevant, but it kind of is, like, for Indianapolis, the rolling cap floor, if you've ever heard of that, the cap spending floor. Basically, over a four-year period, which we're in the last 2 years of that, you need to spend 89% of your salary cap. Otherwise, you forfeit up to that amount to the Players Association, and it gets spread amongst all active players. I don't think it's ever been hit where, like, they've had to activate that, but it exists. It's there. It's typically not a problem because you always roll over cap and then you're always spending it, so it's typically never a problem, but some of these teams that have, like, 60, 70 million in cap space right now,
right,
they need to start using that, and they will because they're not dumb, but they need to start using that, otherwise they're going to hit. They're not going to be able to hit this floor. Anyway. That's all the cap statuses. That's all the free agent statuses. Any questions on that, Mike, that you can think about?
No, I think the one, I mean, I threw out a few there. I don't have any others, so.
Perfect. All right. Let's roll into the Vikings cap situation, shall we?
Yeah.
So, 2019 cap was set at $188.2 million. All right. Vikings rolled over $4.1 million. Now, we would have rolled over less, but Sharif Floyd, if you remember that, he had a grievance with the NFLPA over part of his salary for his fifth-year option. Excuse me. Now, he withdrew that because he's also going to be suing, I think, the NFL and a couple doctors, and I think also the Vikings, technically. So he withdrew that compensation. I think we also settled with him on that contract. So he withdrew that grievance, so we no longer had to withhold that from our cap, which allowed us to roll over that $4.1 million, which puts our effective cap in 2019 at 192.3. All right. Now, currently on the roster, on our 51, our top 51, with all of our future reserve contracts, we have $187 million in cap liabilities, which leaves us $5.3 million in cap space. That's the number you've seen everywhere.
Yep.
Okay. Now, that number is important to keep in mind, for one, but it's also not the full story. So to sign in our draft pool as it stands right now, over the top of the league minimum guys that are at the bottom that are being cut off by the top 51, we're going to need $3.4 million net for that. For the practice squad, we're going to need about $1.5 million. And on average, I've averaged the last 5 years or so, we've had about $3 million on IR. All right? So all that combined means we're about negative $2.6 million on the cap as it sits right now.
Okay.
So if we need to make any moves, we need to make moves to increase cap space, and then sign guys. Obviously, this only kicks in once the season starts,
yeah,
but it's important to keep in mind where this is going to end up.
Right.
Because we can only do so much. Like, we can't end free agency and the draft with zero cap space. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
That's where we're at right now.
Okay.
Any questions on that?
No.
Good? Perfect.
Good.
Okay. Let's talk about the Vikings free agents, Mike, and who we think we want to bring back. So we already talked about the exclusive rights free agent, two that we signed, Matt Wiley, punter, and CJ Ham, fullback. I didn't see any reason why these guys wouldn't be brought back. Like I said, I think it's league minimum. I don't think they're guaranteed contracts. So there's really no risk of bringing these guys back under these contracts. Cedric Lang, O-line, and Josiah Price, O-line, also exclusive rights free agents. I'm not certain about these guys. These guys, I think, were lower-tier guys. I think they were on bouncing between practice squad, I think, so I don't know what you think about those guys at all. Probably nothing major.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big ones, you know, which I'm assuming you're going to get to next, mm-hmm. is really where...
Well, not entirely next, but we're close.
Right.
Yeah, so these guys, like I said, they're pretty much rookies or second-year guys that, you know, they haven't produced a lot, and if they have, you've probably already dealt with them
right.
before that. Restricted free agents, Rashad Hill, we talked about. I wouldn't be surprised if we throw, like, an original round tender on this guy, just to keep it cost-controlled. $2 million, here you go, here's a backup guy. He's played tackle for us in the past, so we know he's capable there, so he could be a good swing backup there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. Anthony Harris, I also would not be surprised to see us do like a second round tender on him.
You have Harris as... So Harris is restricted?
Yes.
Okay.
Now there was some conflicting information. I don't know if it's still conflicting, but he is a restricted free agent.
Okay, I thought I saw somewhere that he was unrestricted.
Right, on I think on SpotTrack he says he's pegged as unrestricted, but he is a restricted free agent, so we will be able to tender him.
Okay.
So I expect that coming. Either that, or they might sign him to like a 2 or 3 year deal that's very similar to the amount of that tender, just to say, okay, we're just going to lock you down now. Here you go. Here's a little gift. Here's a couple $1 million signing bonus. You know, thanks for what you've done up to this point.
I personally, this is where I guess we'll start here. I think Harris would be a player I'd really like to see back. I think that
he's played very well when Sendejo's down this year. Played
very well. We've talked about him for a couple of years now, that we really liked Harris coming in spots. And I think it was either 2 years ago or 3 years ago when he came in, because everyone died on the team that year.
Yep.
He actually played really well. So I think it'd be a great fit. I hope that I hope he's back. Yeah.
Absolutely. And especially with... we'll get to it. One of the expected cuts of Sendejo making $5.5 million this year. Completely no dead money left in that, so you can easily pull some money out of that if you say bye-bye to Sendejo and just tender
We'll get Harris. There, but I'm shocked. We've started to see this week, if you follow the NFL, we're starting to see some
all
of the
these
cuts
safeties
happen.
coming free.
Why? I mean, I'm a little surprised why we haven't just, you know, made that cut right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. It could be one of those things where they're just going to wait to feel it out, because I think Sendejo's contract is structured in a way where it doesn't matter when we cut him, as long as we cut him. So it could be one of those things where we kind of want to see where pricing lands in some of the bigger safeties and kind of go from there. Because we've typically followed kind of a wait and see in some of the bigger guys, and like, okay, what's the market going to set at? Maybe we're in on a couple guys, like I think 2 years ago we were in on Andrew Whitworth and all those guys, those bigger guys. But I think typically the MO for the Vikings has been kind of wait and see where the market sits on certain positions, and then kind of attack from there. And don't get the top guy, maybe you get the 90th percentile guy, you know?
Right.
Excuse me. I'm on the same boat there. I don't know why we haven't just cut him, but there's got to be a reason for it. That's where I'm at. I think they're just kind of waiting and seeing how the market shapes. But we'll roll right into the unrestricted free agents here. Okay, number one on my list, Sheldon Richardson. What do you think about him?
I don't see a way, and you know that I transitioned, if you listened to the show over the last year, incredibly excited over the first few weeks and the pressure we were generating, and then as the season went on, it just wasn't there to a level that I want to pay him what I think he's going to ask for. So for me, I would love to have him here if financially we could make it work. But I just don't think it's going to be close to what we would need him at. So I don't see him being in purple next year.
And, you know, I get the same sense that it's... I think it's just going to be prohibitively expensive, like you said, to kind of keep him around. It's I think he's going to command probably 10-plus based on what interior defenders are going with. Now, if he wants to take 7 or 8 in a long-term deal and you know, maybe it's backloaded... And if that's something he's willing to do, maybe I think we could fit it in. But from what I saw last year, I had a lot higher hopes than what he actually gave to us.
We saw glimpses of
it. We saw glimpses, but, you know, one-year deal, you expect to see a bit more than that because he's wanting to try and get that long-term contract.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a team out there because, like you said, at the end of the day, some of these players of his caliber, teams are going to sign him. Like, the teams have to spend money.
Right. So you look at a team like Indianapolis, like,
right,
they're going to be in on a lot of these moves because they just have such a high cap amount.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Anthony Barr. If they walk up to Anthony Barr and said, hey, we need to spend some money. Here's $15 million a year. Come play for us.
Yeah.
And we're going to front load it so the first year you get $18 million of it.
Yep. No, I don't see him back.
Yeah.
So that's where...
But like I said, unless he really wants to be here and is willing to forego a lot more money to stay here, I don't see it happening. So I think he's gone.
Yep.
Anthony Barr, I think the writing on the wall is he's gone as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at coming into last year, we signed Kendricks to a long-term extension. I would have figured at that point they were approaching Barr for similar. And
Diggs.
Yep, we signed Diggs to the long-term extension too. So Hunter too. So all those were happening, and you can't tell me that they weren't also talking to Barr at that same time. So my opinion is that Barr wants a different role than what he's given here. And he knows he can get it for a higher price than the Vikings can pay. And he's absolutely right on that. And you want to know what? If he wants to go elsewhere and get paid $13, $14, $15 million, fine. I don't think that paying that much, paying $10 million over a replacement for Barr, is really gaining us that much. Right? I mean, you've seen glimpses of it, but he's also had some pretty poor games.
Yeah, I mean, Barr, for me, is there's just no way. And I don't... Financially, it doesn't make sense. I think, you nailed it, there's better schemes.
Yeah.
And I think that he is probably frustrated that it didn't happen last year. They weren't able to come to an agreement. And I think that you're right. The writing's on the wall, and he's going to be gone. How weird would it be to see him in green and gold?
Hey, you shut your mouth, Mike. No, he's not going to freaking Green Bay.
But no, I think, yeah, you're gonna see a recurring theme here as we go through this. And if you're listening, you're like, oh, he's saying no to everyone. And I am going to end up ultimately saying no to a lot of these players. I think you're going to have a pretty different looking team.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the list of free agents as we go down this list, there's key players on defense that are potentially walking out the door. There's also a good number of names on offense and special teams that are walking out the door.
Yeah.
So you could see a whole different face of this team.
It's going to be a different looking team, yep.
And this is kind of the ebb and flow of what goes on here. And I mentioned this, like, right after we signed Kirk Cousins, like, something's got to give at this point. Like, if we didn't sign Kirk Cousins to $28 million, if we signed a quarterback to an $18 million deal, maybe this doesn't happen where we're able to retain Barr. We're able to retain Richardson. But this is the world we live in where we had to make that choice, and to be honest, in the context, that's probably the best decision that we could have made. I mean, you don't know what Teddy's knee's like. You don't know, or we now know what Case Keenum is. So, I mean, the options really weren't that great for that situation. But this is a situation we're in, so we can complain about it all day, but that does us no good.
No.
So, going forward down this list. Now, Seahawks fans apparently are a bit salty on this one. Tom Johnson, he's a free agent now. They're salty because they decided, oh, yeah, we'll just cut you because, you know, we'll sign you back, quote, air quotes, but we're going to cut you because we need to have, like, a ninth safety on the roster or something from last year. I remember I got blocked by this gay person on Twitter because this, like, dude, no, he didn't screw the Seahawks. You cut him, and the Vikings picked him up because they wanted him. Okay? So he's a free agent. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back on the roster because I think he's a very flexible interior defender. I don't know what your thoughts are on Tom Johnson.
I think Johnson will be back. I believe I saw the last couple days that Johnson came out with a quote and just said the Vikings have interest in bringing him back on a one-year deal. He's interested in a one-year deal. He's not looking for a multi-year. A guy that clearly loves to be here, loves playing here. So I think they're going to be able to come together and make something work that's team-friendly and good enough for him on a one-year deal. So I would expect him to be back.
Yeah, I'd probably guess like maybe $1 to $3 million somewhere in there. Probably closer to the higher end of that. But obviously he's looking to kind of do a prove it for himself and then go out and either get the bigger contract here or somewhere else.
Yeah.
So great situation for the Vikings, I think. It'd be a good bridge for some of the younger guys we have at D-tackle that are coming up. Georgia Loca. This one is interesting to me because it's like we didn't really use him last year, so I don't expect him to be back at all.
Well, and it was confusing. We talked about it on a week-in, week-out basis, and we know Harris was playing well, but it's just a little surprising that a guy of his caliber, at least seemingly his caliber, didn't get in on the field. He handled it very professionally, but at the end of the year, I remember his exit interview was like, yeah, I'm frustrated. I thought I was going to play a lot more. I wanted to contribute more than I did to this team. And so I don't think that he will be back just because... Now, I'm sure there is a world where we don't bring Harris back. We cut Deho and maybe you
work go out that route. Yeah.
But I just think he's probably going to be a little gun-shy from the fact that he didn't play when he thought he was going to.
Which is warranted. And, you know, maybe the part of that is we had such a log jam at DBs like last year where, you know, you had... he was coming in and he was lights out, and then Mac Alexander came back and came up with a roar, and you saw Holton Hill come in. So maybe they were envisioning George Iloka or Anthony Harris to fill kind of that money backer role that those guys were excelling at, and it just never materialized because these guys have scheme knowledge that Iloka's trying to compete against, and they all of a sudden started to play very well.
Yep.
So yeah, it's kind of an awkward situation. Like you said, I think we all expected him to play a bit more once he signed here, but not expecting him back.
Nope.
If he is, you know, I'd be fine with that. You know, he's still a good safety.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But on 1-1 walk, he'll be fine. He'll feel fine at the team. Trevor Siemian, quarterback.
I don't know. I mean,
You got Kyle Slaughter, man.
And I think that they're really through the process with Slaughter, right? They went through and he was Denver, right?
Practice yep, squad, Denver,
and
yep.
We offered him the money and brought him in, and there was apparently other teams that really wanted him. And No.
That's Slaughter. Siemian, we traded Denver. To trade at the
right. Denver. Yeah, sorry. I'm on Slaughter still.
Okay, so you're still on Slaughter. Okay.
So I think that the Vikings like him. I think he's going to be here for sure. So that brings us to Siemian. You're paying $84 million to Cousins. You have another guy you believe in. This is a team that's really, really needs to trim the fat everywhere.
Right, to try to make up some of that.
So to me, this seems like an obvious spot to try to save a couple million dollars.
Maybe you draft a quarterback later. Yeah, you do like an undrafted free agent quarterback.
You practice squat it. You do some. I mean, you could roster me for $400K. You know, $495.
See, for me, like I've been advocating for a while. Just roster two quarterbacks. Just roster two, because it gives you so much flexibility elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because there's only a handful of teams that only roster two. I don't get why that there's not more. How durable Kirk Cousins has been in his career, roster two, you'll be fine with that.
Maybe they will explore that, but I think that I don't see Siemian being here.
I think I agree. I think he can command more than what we can pay him reasonably within the context of our cap situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's a great backup. I think he was sought after. That's why we traded for him with what we did, but he gone.
Okay.
Latavius Murray, running back.
Man, this one hurts because I want him to be here. I love him. I know.
I think he's such a good change of pace from
culture
Kirk.
Guy. Yeah. We used him, you know, last year throughout. He was still involved even when Dalvin got going.
Yeah,
and
he was pretty effective at times.
Yeah, and I know he came out and said he's not interested in being a second back. He wants to start. I get that. I know he's got to say that. If that is truly the case, then there's not a spot for him here.
There's not an amount we could pay him if that's the case.
Right. But if he's interested in trying to win and continue on and just accepting that he's still going to be involved in what should be a very good offense, then I think if you can come to terms on the right number, I would love to have him back.
Right. But on the other side of this coin, you look at all these guys that are young draft picks or whatever, you know, you look at in Pittsburgh, James Conner coming in.
Yeah.
and just lighten it up. Like,
yeah, running back.
He was like a mid-round draft pick.
Running back's the spot.
At what spot do you say, okay, let's stop spending money on this spot? Because every draft pick that's coming out seems to just be like, if you got the right scheme for him, if you got the right O-line for him, they're just fine.
Well,
so at what point do you stop the bleeding on the cap and just say, all right, we're just going to draft a guy?
Well, and you look last year, we saw some flashes from Mike Boone and Rock Thomas.
Rock Thomas, see you later, out, bud. But,
you know, maybe this is a great opportunity for them to mutually part ways with Latavius and say, you know, Rock Thomas, you're in jail.
Mike Boone, what's up?
What are you doing? You know, we really liked it. Work on some things with him and have him come in and give him an opportunity. You've got CJ Ham there.
Right.
You know, maybe that's the way they go. But again, for a team that's trying to trim and save everywhere they can.
Right. It's one of those things where you maybe you go with Mike Boone on a cost-controlled contract, and now, okay, you have your second-round pick, Dalvin Cook, right? And he's your premier back. He's still making like two-something million. Everyone else is making minimum behind him. Maybe that's good enough. I mean, at some point, you got to get lean somewhere, like you said.
No, gut. Latavius is gone.
Yep. Amir Abdullah, we traded. I think, no, we didn't trade for him late. He was a cut late, and we picked him up.
We picked him up late waiver in the season.
Didn't see much, but just on my list here. So, Aldrick Robinson, wide receiver.
I
wouldn't be surprised if he's back.
Yeah, really liked him. I think that you could see the chemistry with him and Cousins.
Absolutely. Maybe a good fourth, fifth wide receiver option.
You have a lot of people clamoring for the Vikings to bring in a true, really high-end third down receiver.
Right.
You know, obviously the Treadwell hate is out there, not necessarily for me, but a lot of people out there really just don't want to see him on the squad anymore.
I think both sides need a fresh start in that.
Right. So, you know, I don't know. But I think Robinson, if again, we can agree to a deal that works, I would love him back because the chemistry is there. He had what? He must have had 4 touchdowns last year, something like that.
I think it might be even higher than that, completely agree. I wouldn't be surprised if we throw him a million or two next year, maybe even a 2-year deal worth like 4 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So wouldn't be surprised. I think that'd be a smart move. Obviously, like you said, there's chemistry with Cousins. That's something you got to take into account here.
Yep.
Some familiarity there. It all helps. Year 2 in the system is always also a big bonus. But yeah, so we'll move on to some of our O-line here now. Tom Compton. Now, to preface this, Tom Compton, left guard. Everyone was like piling on to this guy. The problem was, he was like our top-rated guy. Our Pro Football Focus top-rated offensive lineman. And he was never meant to start, all right? So if he's brought back on a small deal to be as a backup, I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where you're at with that, but I mean, he was never meant to start, and he did pretty damn well starting for the majority of the year.
I just think that line was in such limbo throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Like, and obviously
it felt a lot like 16.
We've talked on Sperano's passing, and we've talked on the change of coordinators and just how much of a mess the offense was at times last year. Now that you've got a little bit more structure, I could sit here and tell you, I like him. I thought overall, whatever, you know, just like you just did right there. Ultimately, I'm just going to put faith in the coaching staff that we've put into place and the schemes that we're going in.
If they want him,
if they like what they saw,
we'll
if they think Compton's a good fit, great. If not, let's move on. Let's get some new bodies in.
I think that's a good point to make here because, for all intents and purposes, the scheme, the offensive scheme is kind of changing. I think the running scheme is more aligned with the players that we have, kind of what they excel at. So I'm right there with you on that. You brought in Kubiak and all his cronies, you know, Rick Dennison and all those guys for this specific reason, right? To say, okay, we need help here. We need to have a cohesive plan with run blocking, pass blocking, all that crap. So get us a guy in here that can evaluate our guys and tell us who we want to keep. So I'm right there with you. I think it ultimately comes down to what the coaching wants. I mean, I can talk to the end of the earth that he was one of our top-graded PFF linemen, but apparently people saw different on game day. I don't know what they were looking at, but regardless, moving on to another O-line, Nick Easton. Neck injury last year.
Yeah.
He's apparently been cleared, but
I always liked Easton. Neck injuries are tough. I know, and you've told me that, and I believe you. I just always liked Easton. I like the story. I like the, you know, I enjoyed him as a player. So
yeah, I think he's a very adequate left guard, and I think he could be even better than that with proper coaching, but God, neck injuries scare the crap out of me.
But again, I think at this point, you know, you got to trust Sugarman, you got to trust the medical staff, and then you, again, just go to the
coaching. Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
If they see a fit for him, then let's go. If not, then okay.
My gut is that you're going to see a lot of these guys gone, and I think they're going to get more of a clean slate here. Because, the entire state of Minnesota, I mean, we could... you could go talk to anyone, whether Vikings, huge Viking fan or not, and ask, like, well, what are the problems with the Vikings?
Offensive line
is going to come out of it, you know? So I think that they just, there's almost like a bit of a PR move or a PR play here, and it's got to be weighing on their minds. And you know what? If they can get and just get some new faces in here,
right.
I think that people are at least going to back off a little bit and let them hopefully succeed next year.
Now, an interesting thing that was brought up, I think, a couple times on Twitter, and we'll probably get into this more when the draft comes due, but a thought was either bringing in a free agent center or drafting a center and shifting Elflein to a guard spot.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Now, that's an interesting concept to me. Now, I don't necessarily hate it. I don't know what Elflein is going to do at guard, but if you can get a lockdown center, you can get one of the, like, for instance, I think Bradbury is one of the centers they're talking about in the draft. If you can get one of those guys that's like even better at center than Elflein has been, and I think he's been pretty damn good the last couple of years. Now, he lacks some strength this year because he pretty much had zero offseason to condition his shoulder after he had surgery on that. But if you put that place in center, and now you also solve one of your guard spots by shifting Elflein there, now you're looking a lot better in my terms, because I think the tackles are solidified right now with O'Neal and Reeve. You need to solve that interior. That helps the puzzle a lot. So I like that a lot. I don't know who's out there that we can target for center. I know there's that guy from Denver. I forget the guy's name. Regardless, interesting things. It's going to be very interesting to watch how they rebuild this line and try to get value out of some of these lower priced guys, because that's kind of what we're stuck with right now.
Yeah.
Next one, Brett Jones, who we called in to replace kind of Elflein while he was still out.
Again, same. I'm just going to go down the same thing. Now, Jones, correct me if I'm wrong, has a little bit of versatility, right? He played a little bit of center with the Giants.
A little bit of guard.
A little bit of guard. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's going to be all coaching staff. What do they envision going forward? How is this offense going to work?
Right.
What do you need out of those players? Obviously, a veteran guy, I think, you know, I do think there's a lot of value in that veteran, that leadership that that they can bring in. But
see, the issue with me on Jones is we brought him in and he played center for, I think, 3-4 games till Elflein got back.
Yeah.
Right? He never saw the field after that until there was, like, in-game injuries. That's a problem to me, because if you can't crack that roster on what we had last year, you're probably not great.
Yeah.
So, I understand, like you said, the point of flexibility, that's great, but I don't think he gets signed to anything like greater than $1 million, if he's anything.
Okay.
And he's a swing interior backup. But I think you get more value, like I said, just taking that money, getting yourself a solid center, and now you have Elflein as a guard, and now he has center flexibility if you need that.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm thinking with that.
Yep.
All right, two big ones here, Mike. Two big ones, all right. Dan Bailey.
I was waiting for this one.
Kicker Watch 2019.
Kicker Watch. You know me. I'm big on the kickers.
Kicker Watch 2019.
Here's where I'm at. I would be 100% okay if it came out right now that Bailey had been signed to a one-year deal for this year.
For how much?
Do I want to make him the top-paid kicker in the NFL? No. But I think that he can be paid above the middle, above the median.
What's the number?
I think he could be paid as a top 7 kicker in the league, whatever that puts it at.
Okay, well, what do you think that's at?
I don't know what that number is. Was it like 2.7 maybe, something like that?
Top 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. No, the top 7 kicker would be $4 million.
Okay. Mike. Well, my
are you still okay with signing him for $4 million based
what's
on
top 10?
What he did
what's
last
top
year?
Top 10?
Okay, top 10. Top 10 is $3,785,000, Mike.
All right, so we're probably looking at having to sign him to
top half. I think you're above $3 million.
Okay, so am I okay giving him $3.5 million? Yes.
But okay, my realistic, I think I had them slotted for around 3-5 as a cap hit this year. No, I have it as 2-5. It's incredibly low. But if you're going to structure a deal, you're probably going to structure his that way, where it's low up front.
Okay.
And then if he does well, then he's got like 0 guaranteed in the last years, but it's like 5.5, 6.5.
I have got the faith. I still got. I was fine with Kai coming in last year, and then we ended up not going that route, which we should have argued.
Never draft specialists.
Can argue that that
ever
playoffs, but otherwise, what I want to do is back the Brinks truck up to Gostkowski, and let's give him 7-5.
Jesus, Mike. For kickers?
Yeah. Then we don't have to worry about it.
No, let's Mike, just bring Mike, it in. No. Here's the situation. We're not rostering a kicker, okay? Our punter's going to handle kickoff duties. We are not kicking a damn field goal. We are not kicking an extra point. If it's 4th and 40 and you're at the 40, you're either punting it or you're going for it, okay?
It's a bold strategy.
Okay? And you're going for 2 every time. AAF the shit out of this, man.
I don't think this is a bad idea.
The 2-point conversion thing? You're statistically better off going for two points.
That's fine. But what about when we need, like, I don't know, a 35-yarder to win a game?
Go for it.
Okay.
You got Kirk Cousins. You're paying him $28 million. Make him make his money.
In summary, I think for me, if Bailey wants to be here, I'd prefer Bailey. Otherwise, give me some sort of veteran, maybe like Kai. Not sure if he's on a squad right now. My dream world, though, is we just pay Gostkowski. Just give him the money. Write the check. Ask him what it'll take, and you just write the check.
Just to lock down the kick-in?
Yeah.
Now that Prefer is gone, it's not rooting kickers anymore?
That's what I want.
Okay. You know, I don't absolutely hate it, but it takes away from somewhere else. So you gotta give up somewhere else.
It's one less thing for me to worry about.
Yes, okay, but let me pose this for you here. What if signing him in that $7.5 million means that your old line is still downgraded?
I'm cutting Everson. I'm cutting Everson to pay for Gostkowski.
Okay. All right, okay. There it is. You hate Everson.
That's my straight switch.
You hate Everson. Okay, I got it. Cutting Everson to pay for Gostkowski.
Yeah.
Why don't you just trade him for, what's his name? Daniel Carlson.
I think Blair's still out there somewhere.
We're not going to talk about the Blair Witch Project, okay?
Okay.
Because we're not doing that. All right, so...
Well, we better get your thought on this. What do you think for Bailey? This is where it started.
Like I said, I want it to be a backloaded deal. You know, either that or, you know, do something with some kind of incentives. Like if you hit 80% of your kicks, we'll bump you up next year $2 million or something like that. Because I was not impressed last year with his accuracy. I just wasn't. Historically, he's been great. I don't know if that's just a Prefer thing and trying to make him change how he kicks. I was not impressed last year, and I don't think he's worth the $4.5 million that he's probably going to command in free agency. I think he'd be better off, honestly, saving that money, putting it elsewhere, and getting an undrafted free agent kicker or some veteran that's on the street.
Sure. Okay.
That's where I'm at with it. I wasn't impressed enough to require the money. I'm not opposed to doing the Gostkowski thing. 7.5, I think, is a bit excessive because I think that's that would make him far and away the highest paid kicker. And Robbie Gould is on a franchise tag this year. A kicker got franchise tag. A kicker.
If the Vikings would have franchised Bailey, where would your mind be right now? Would you just...
I would... Oh, God. I don't even want to go there, man. I can't handle that right now.
Oh, man.
I can't handle that. But anyway, yeah, so that's where I'm at with that. I wasn't impressed. If he comes back for a low deal... Sure, let's go. Let's make another go of it. Maybe another 1 year, $2.5 million. We'll see what you got.
Okay.
Last guy, Mike. One guy we talk about getting cut every year. You know what I'm talking about?
Sherrills?
Marcus Sherrills.
All right.
Punt returner. I'm not going to call him a cornerback because he's not a damn cornerback. He may be on that on the roster, but he's not a cornerback.
Right.
If Marcus Sherrills is playing cornerback with the Vikings, a lot of shit has gone wrong.
Right.
What do you think?
I think Sherrills should probably be gone. I thought that last year.
I thought the last three years. But.
So, yeah, if it's up to me, he's gone. Again, another spot to save and, you know, put someone else back there.
Get a rookie back there or get... who was going to do it? Was that Holton Hill? I think Holton Hill was doing it for a little bit there.
No, wasn't it the who got
Mike Hughes?
Yeah,
I think they both have kick return chops. Okay. So
yeah,
I think we got options there more or less.
Yeah.
Now, consistency wise, I don't think you're going to get better than Sherrill's. But like you said, we got to trim fat where we can. And I don't think that having Sherrill's on for $2.5 million is significantly is worth $2 million more than a rookie on a contract. That's where I'm at with that. And obviously you agree.
I do.
So, that's all our free agents. Let's talk about a couple moves that we think are going to happen. Sendejo, we think, is going to get cut. Remmers, I would be surprised if he didn't get cut, or at a minimum restructured way down from what he's at, but probably cut. So I see those as almost 100% locks.
Rock Thomas, that's going to save 570.
Well, it's going to save 570, but then we got to replace it with 570. True. Yeah. So those two cuts, I think, are 100% on the table. Possible cuts and trades: Rudolph, Griffin, Rhodes, and Waynes. Okay. Now, I've been battered to hell on Twitter for suggesting that we're going to trade a cornerback, but I think it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
You're starting to see people come around to it now.
Because it makes sense in twofold, right? So my take has always been, we've historically been very adept at developing DBs, right? That's Zimmer's specialty. That's Jerry Gray's specialty. The defensive coaching staff has been in place intact for the last 4 years, like zero changes. So if you're really good at developing DBs, rely on that, right? Rely on that strength and get assets to get better at a spot you can't really develop well, like the O-line. Like if you just say, oh, okay, we're going to trade Waynes for top five interior guard or center, straight up, I'm down right now. I don't care. Like, I love Waynes, I love Rhodes, I love them both. If you were to give me either one of those options, I'd be like, yep, let's go.
Right.
You give me a first, second round pick for either one of those guys, I'd be like, yep, let's go. Let me get a strength back for one of our strengths that we can continually develop. That's where I'm at with that. I think Rudolph and Griffin, it's really going to depend on what we can get for him if we think it's worth it to make that trade. I think Rudolph is a high candidate to be cut. $7 million, I don't think we can restructure him down and extend him down less than that this year. That's going to make a difference. And I think he can get more elsewhere. I just don't see him on the roster next year at $7 million.
I keep going back and forth. I know I shouldn't factor it in, but he's such a presence in the community. He's such a team guy that I'm letting that play into the fact that, yes, if I was looking at this as just as a football team, I think it's a no-brainer. You cut ties. You say this is a great spot to save some money.
Right.
And Rudolph had a pretty good year last year. I think one of his better years. But, you know, we're still, this isn't like Jimmy Graham in his prime in New Orleans. This isn't a key cog, I don't think, to make this team
right.
Go.
It's not something like I've been harping on this entire whole episode. It's not something where I think the value of $6 million plus over a draft pick is worth it.
Right.
For what you're going to gain, possibly.
Yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, you could draft a guy that even fits better for what we're looking for.
Well, there's a lot of, I've seen a lot of mocks that have us taking a tight end in that 18, at 18.
Either 18 or at 50.
Yeah.
I've seen both. Like, there's a couple really nice tight ends out there. So, I don't know. It's one of those things where I could kind of see it going either way, but I don't think you're going to be able to get the cap it down enough this year that's going to make a dent. So I don't understand why you would possibly do that instead of just ripping off the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And I understand the community aspect of it, and that's also the same reservation I have with Griffin, is he's such a lovable guy. Like, you don't just want to cut ties with him. But it's, I don't know, it's tough, like you said, because the off-the-field stuff is so great for the community, so great for Minnesota. But I think the business decisions got to dictate here.
For me, Griffin, I think Griffin's a no-brainer. I don't see how you bring back.
Not at 10.5.
No. I mean, you have a 10.5 cap savings right now, I believe, on at least the site that I'm on, from a cut. And I just, it's, I think that's a huge number. a huge number.
Right, okay. But that's why I say he's one of the prime trade candidates. All right. So he's still a really good defensive end. All right. The only problem is the off-the-field stuff. I don't know if that's taken care of. I don't know if that's...
Right.
That's what it is. That's going to be a risk for anyone trying to trade for him. That's the only potential issue with trying to trade him. However, I also feel like you could approach him with probably a fairly significant pay cut, and he'd probably go for it, because he loves being here too. So that's where I'm like, well, okay, where do the Vikings value what we're getting out of him, right? Is he still worth being on the roster if he's only making 7? Is he still worth being on the roster if he's making 6? Where does that number sit where the Vikings are like, okay, we get enough value out of that 6 that we want to keep you here. So if you can take 6, we'll keep you here. You'll be fine. But if you can't, then we just got to let you go. That's where I don't know where that conversation is at, but I get the feeling that he'd want to stay here if he could. But on the other side of it, if the Vikings have faith in who we have behind Griffin, and we can maybe get a third, fourth round pick somewhere in there back for him from a trade partner like Oakland, for instance, who apparently needs edge rushers, I don't know. I think we could see him traded too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him back at that number. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I would make a guarantee that's rock solid. I don't think he'll be playing for $10.7 million for the Vikings next year. No. $10.7 million for someone else, maybe, but I just don't see it. All right, now, possible restructure candidates. The problem with restructuring all these contracts to shift money into future years is that continually gets harder to do. Yeah, Kirk Cousins is already on a prorated deal where it's 28, 29, and 31. So that's only going to accelerate. Soon enough, you end up overpacing what the cap can get you.
Right.
So there's only so many restructures you can do. But there are a couple that make some sense. Rhodes, for instance, makes sense. He's got, I think, 3 or 4 years left on his deal. Linval makes sense. Harrison also makes sense. He's got 3 years left on his deal, so he could restructure a little bit, get some more guaranteed up front. Reef, I've talked about this before. I don't think you can pull a lot out of Reef, but I think he could probably restructure it a little bit to make a lot more of his 2019 guaranteed and cut some of the guarantees off of the later parts of that deal. Griffin, we just talked about. Another great candidate for restructure. He's got $1.2 million dead, all right? That's a lot of cap savings, and if he wants to convert some of that guaranteed, like, say, for instance, we say, okay, we'll give you $5 million guaranteed up to $6.5 million. All right, the $1.5 million is roster bonuses. You can pick up some cheap cash like that.
Right.
I don't know. It's...
What about Thielen? You know, what about the fact that he's... And I know your stance on if they sign the contract, they sign the contract,
yep.
But, you know, you hear things that they're looking... His agent, and he says he's leaving it to the agent, but clearly he's performing as one of the best receivers in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And,
but,
you know, what is your thought on... I mean, I know where your stance is, but what is your thought on what the Vikings are actually going to do in that situation here?
All right, well, here's the thing, all right? He's getting paid $8.1 million next year. That's still significant, all right? That's not top of the food chain money, but when he signed that contract, when he made that contract, they put escorters in place in case this kind of stuff happened, all right? Now, I understand the concept of keeping him happy, taking care of him early. He's got, like, I think 2 more years left on his deal. He's a UFA in 2021. I don't see the reason why we need to touch that this year. Because he's got those escalators built in. Now, like I said, I understand. Pay the guys because he's performed very well for us. But I can't justify that when we are in this tight of a cap situation. It's just impossible to justify that. When he's under contract for 2 more years, you know he's continuing to play on that contract. I just can't justify that.
Right. I was just trying to get where, you know, you dive into this cap stuff so much, and, you know, it's all, there's so many moving pieces, and...
Yeah.
every dollar matters, you know, and when you're trying to build a championship team, which the Vikings still, I think you and I firmly believe, are in that window, you know, how I would love to be a fly on the wall in the rooms when they try to have those conversations and leverage the, listen, we understand you're worth this, but we're trying to win a championship, and if we give you this, you understand that that means this can't happen.
Right.
And talk through some of those things, and, you know, it's just, it's really an interesting piece of the business.
Yeah. Like I said, some of those conversations are just, I can't even imagine how some of those go down. Like the B-Rob conversations when you constantly take pay cuts, like, how does that gotta feel if you're B-Rob? Like, oh, wait, I'm taking a pay cut so this guy can get paid, like, ridiculous amounts of money?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because we go back to what you said about, you know, grit in the community, and there's all this emotion tied to it, but at some point, you gotta take that out of it. Right? At some point, it's just gotta be business and be like, okay, well, do I want a ring or do I want money? And if that comes down to Adam Thielen in 2 years, if we haven't taken care of him this year, but we want to try next year, and he says, nope, I'm just going to play it out, then it comes down to money for him, then hey, that's what it is. I think it's the risk you have to take, and you have to say, okay, maybe you sit him down and you say, all right, listen, we can't do anything this year for you. Next year, if you continue to this level, we'll talk about it, and we'll do something, and we'll take care of you. We can't do it this year, though.
Right.
If you want a shot, if you want a chance, just give us this room. And you want to know what? I'd be sitting down with Kirk Cousins as well and having the same conversation. I'd be like, hey, listen, do you like getting hit every other play? No? All right. Give us $4 million of your contract to work with here, bud. We need some O-line help.
Right.
Because you can't tell me that there's any reason why he needs to make $28 million a year.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's all relative to, you know, you're seeing however many quarterbacks now are making that kind of money, and you know,
Tom Brady.
Right. No, I get where you're coming from, and it's just, that's something that, how do you approach it with the players? How do you manage it as a team? You know, that's where, probably why those guys get paid a lot of money to do that, and I think, like you said, whether it be Rudolph, Griffin, Thielen, not saying Thielen's obviously going to get, you know, we're not for the restructure or whatever else, but, you know, you start to look at some of these guys. Rhodes could be cut, or Waynes could be cut right now. We don't lose any money on that deal. Not that that's going to happen, because he's too valuable. He's too young, you know.
Right.
But you start to look at all these things and where their trade value is. Where can we save $9 and $10 million? What can they do with that to shore up that offensive line? What right. will that weakness will that create? What about these younger players that we saw glimpses last year? And at some point, you just have to move your chips in where you think, you know, where you think you're good, and then the season's going to start.
Right.
And that's really what we're trying to figure out, is where are we going to take some chance, and where are we going to solidify?
Right.
And you know, that's,
and this is my education. Like, I understand that cornerbacks are one of the highest value positions that there are.
Yeah.
I get it. I truly do. But if the Vikings are good at developing cornerbacks, why aren't we just staying cheap in rookies on cornerbacks? Yeah, you might lose some production out of that. You might be giving up more yards than you want. But what that does is it allows you to mask a weakness with money. Right now, the past almost decade, it seems, we have done the opposite. We've spent money on the defense, spent money on the defense, spent money on the defense. What do we have on the offensive line until we signed Reef and Remmers? What have we done there to spend money there? Almost nothing. We've relied on free agents that are coming in for cheap, or one high-end draft pick, one drafted at number 4 pick. Like, at some point, you got to flip the script here and say, okay, we tried this crap of just throwing low-level picks and low-level free agents at the offensive line. It done work.
Yeah.
We can't develop that. At what point do you just say, well, enough is enough?
Yeah.
And you rip the Band-Aid off and you say, okay, well, Zimmer, you're going to have one less prime DB to work with. Figure it out.
Yep.
Your defensive guru figured out, you know?
No, I got you.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited to see how this breaks down here in the next week, because there's a lot of very interesting pieces at play. And I could easily see some really funky moves that come out of left field from the Vikings.
Yeah. We'll be here for them.
We will. Anything else on the cap, Mike, free agents that you want to mention here before we wrap her up for the day?
No, I don't think so. I think we're still in that, like you said, free agency starting up here in a few days, and I think let's see where the cuts are made, and some of the stuff's going to start to come out, and you know, in the next couple months, we're really going to start forming the team and seeing these decisions made, and I can't wait to break them down as we do, you know, as they happen. So
yeah. It's exciting year, man. Exciting year.
Yeah. Gotta have faith still, somehow.
All right, well, that'll wrap it up here for the Scolders Podcast, part of the Climb in the Pocket Network. Check out their website, climbinthepocket.com, scolders.com. I'm on Twitter at Namok7.
Musky_Mike.
Come chat us. We'll pretty much answer anything you ask me as long as you don't call me a douchebag or anything like that. But anyway, until next time, Mike. Skol Vikes.
Skol.